Bob Gibbiat, who produced Fox's smash hit Alien Autopsy, Fact or Fiction, 10 years ago, and followed it with many other widely watched Fox Network specials about UFOs on tape, ghosts, miracles, prophecies, and other unexplained phenomena topics that fascinate millions of us, has several new shows in production as well. Tonight, we'll talk about a few of his projects, which include a definitive update expose on the Alien Autopsy saga. And I'll also give us a glimpse of some never-seen-before footage unveiling some of those new shows and how Hollywood is dealing with paranormal subjects in general. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Great, George. How are you tonight?
Good to have you back. You know, that program, and I distinctly remember that 10 years ago, was a huge success for Fox when that network was relatively in its infancy, wasn't it?
Well, it really wasn't in its infancy. It was in its, I would say, second level of its development. It has already had a lot of hits on, like Married with Children and several other type shows. But overall, The X-Files was just becoming a stalwart at the channel. They were, at the network, they basically were starting to realize that mysteries were something that had a lot of play with the public. And I think they learned it in two ways. They learned it with a show called Sightings that, you know, was put on first before Alien Autopsy. In fact, I left Unsolved Mysteries on NBC, where I was doing a lot of this type of programming, actually some segments with ratings that rivaled the Alien Autopsy prior to the Alien Autopsy, about phenomena, UFOs specifically. But when Fox heard about some of the ratings I was getting at NBC, they asked me to come in and work on a show called Encounters, which was the follow-on show from Sightings. So they had a little bit of history growing at that point in 94, 95. They knew The X-Files was popular. It was becoming more and more popular. And they sensed there might be an opening for something along these lines even after the show Encounters had done fairly well, but, you know, didn't really latch on like with a major, major ratings. So when I walked in with this footage of what looked, for all intents and purposes, like an alien being autopsied on a government slab, you know, it was a natural win-win. Four or five other networks were interested, but they were at least at Fox willing to let me try to get an investigation going as part of the program, where a lot of the other networks we had spoken to about the footage wanted it proven one way or the other before we went on the air. And I think history has shown that the news media is as quick to as quick as any other part of the media, entertainment-wise, to put a story on, even where there's no story. One of the best examples, it's a tragic, tragic story, of that girl who disappeared the blonde girl who disappeared.
The new one, Aruba?
Yeah, Aruba.
Natalie Holloway.
Holloway. I wanted to make sure I got the right island, yeah. Aruba. And you notice that every little moment they're announcing a new thing. It's like before there's even any news, they'll announce that maybe there was a suspect they were speaking to, and then maybe the suspect's going to be arrested or maybe not. And there's no difference between what we did with the Alien Autopsy and any other newspaper even around the country that would run a news story on page 5, and then it gets a little bit more juicy, and they air it, and they put it on page 3, and then before you know it, it's on page 1, or maybe they relegate it back to page 15, but they're trying to tell the story as it's being, as it's unfolding. So all we did with the Alien Autopsy at Fox was tell people there was a breaking story. There was a guy in England who claimed he had gotten this footage from a U.S. military cameraman retired, that he had come to Florida somehow and got a showing or a screening of this footage, and then spent 2 years between 93 and 95 securing that footage from the military cameraman through a financial purchase. So all of that is interesting story matter, no
question. Absolutely.
And who, what journalist in the world, whether it be a network or a news division or a producer like me that's sort of on the cusp between entertainment and news, no question, it's an intriguing story. So we told the story as we knew it. We did 3 broadcasts of Alien Autopsy, Fact or Fiction. You might remember, George, and your listeners might remember. And the first one was the premiere, and it was very shocking to people. The second one was airing just a week later, or aired a week later, and it had more footage showing some of the gorier scenes. And then just 2 months later, in November, they asked me again to put another update segment into the program and air it again. So continuing that thinking, we eventually did a bunch of other specials on other topics that were very highly rated, like you mentioned tonight, Miracles and Visions, Factor Fiction, hosted by Roma Downey. Then we did a show called Prophecies of the Millennium, where we just mentioned that, in fact, the other few months ago, I was on talking with you and John Hogue about predictions John Hogue made that actually matched 9/11. And then, sadly, actually, it did a few years earlier predict in 97 that something tragic was going to happen right about around the World Trade Center and probably would lead us into a major world calamity. And sure enough, we all know what happened there. So we did Prophecies, then we came back with a show called UFOs, The Best Evidence Ever Caught on Tape. That actually was the first one in the UFOs we did. And we ended up doing the second one in 2000. And then we did a show called called World's Greatest Hoaxes, Secrets Finally Revealed. And in this show, World's Greatest Hoaxes, I implored Fox to let me take a shot at this. We showed why we believed 3 years after airing the alien autopsy shows. We showed why we believed in 98, 3 years later, we thought the entire case was now a fraud. And we explained that there was a piece of footage that constituted the alien autopsy package, or was part of that package,
sure,
that no one had ever seen before. And if you looked at this piece of footage, you would know that there were identifiable faces you could see. And if you could, unlike the brightly lit scene that we all know about the alien autopsy as, there were two other segments that came with the footage. Now, just to give the viewers, listeners and viewers, and anyone who cares about this topic, all the facts, they need to know that when Ray Santilli, the gentleman from England behind the footage, when he acquired the footage and then passed it over to me and Fox and other networks around the world, it was a three-film package. Film number one was something called the tent footage.
Okay.
It looked like an alien creature of some kind laying on a slab in a tent, a makeshift tent, if you will. The story that they were telling us, the people around Ray Santilli and Ray himself, was that the cameraman claimed this 2 or 3 minute sequence showed the alien being prepped for travel, being analyzed by President Harry Truman's scientific team back in 1947, getting it ready basically for a future much more lavish autopsy, and a much more thorough one that allegedly was done supposedly in Fort Worth. This is what we see on the film. And after that, the alien was brought to Fort Worth, Texas, and that's where we see the brightly lit autopsy, which runs about 17 minutes. And then there was a third scene. And the third scene seemed to show metal debris with six-fingered handprints and metal debossed into it. They look almost like some sort of dashboards, if you will. Then there were hieroglyphic I-beams matching to some degree what people claim was recovered at Roswell.
Sure.
So they really had a three-film package that was never separated from each other. We just decided at Fox that we were not going to show the darkly lit tent footage, scene number one I just mentioned.
So you were aware of all these?
Oh, sure. And
okay.
Fox, yeah. And the interesting thing was Fox said, you know what, Bob, why don't you and your staff focus on the bright scene? And as you get more into the investigation, we can unravel some more of this. But to get to the main gist of it for the viewer, that's our first step. Let's show them the autopsy in all its glory. Let's get all the experts to focus on that, because it's much more compelling.
Now, at this point, when you're putting together the original alien autopsy show for Fox, were you a believer, or were you just being a great Hollywood producer?
No, actually, there's no question that when I first saw the scenes, I had big problems with what was called the 10 footage. The 10 footage did not match the rest of the footage in any way, did not look like it matched, no doubt about it. It didn't seem to match. The brightly lit scene was compelling. There's no question about it. The brightly lit scene seemed to suggest it might be a real biological creature being autopsied. The third scene with the metal debris, very disappointing. Ray Santilli had implied, the guy behind the footage, that we were going to see Harry Truman walking in the crash site. Not some guy trying to jump in front of the camera block a little bit.
Right.
The 10 footage seemed to show some guy moving back and forth with a trench coat. but no one could believe that was Harry Truman walking around. And so most of what Ray promised had never been delivered. So I kept saying to Fox back in the early, early round of production, we cannot leave out the 10 footage and the brightly lit scene for fear of looking like we're stacking the deck for believability. And they kept saying, well, Bob, look, the autopsy is so powerful. Just, you know, let's focus on that and we'll see where we are. So that was their concept, not mine. I want to make that clear. The earliest treatments, which are still in our files, were a detailed investigation of all the films. All three films. Their decision to motivate me that that was basically not what they wanted changed, in my opinion, the way the show and the story unfolded. And I have to take responsibility for allowing that to occur, because I guess I could have stood on my head and said, no, guys. But I think everyone should understand that when you're in a situation where you get a chance to do an investigatory special like this.
For a major network.
Yeah. I mean, so they tell you you can't, let's say you get three Rembrandts out of auction, and maybe some are better than others, and maybe one is more believable than the other.
Yeah.
I don't think I could stand on my head and go, guys, I won't do a show unless we focus on all three Rembrandts. I'll focus on the most important Rembrandt, and hopefully we'll get to the other ones in due time. Well, that's exactly what happened. Fox said to me, after doing several other shows, other topics like I just said before, that, Bob, if you want to do World's Greatest Hoaxes, they said, eventually, and I'll try to be as
diplomatic,
thank you, George, as diplomatic as I can, because I love Fox. I had a great opportunity, many shows with them, so I'm never going to in any way not be thankful for the opportunities there. But I'm simply going to say, when it came right down to it, they have finally let me do an investigation as part of World's Greatest Hoaxes after much urging on my part about the alien autopsy. So when they asked me, okay, so what part of the alien autopsy saga can we reveal finally is a fraud? And I explained, well, there's no doubt, as we know, the 10 footage has faces you can see. Doctors are not covered up with any kind of, head dressing, any kind of contamination suit. You can see them. They're standing above this creature, removing some material or skin, it's hard to tell, from the creature. Seemingly, that's what it appeared to be at the time. And, you know, Santilli did start to backtrack from the initial story by now. By 98, he was saying the 10 footage is something the cameraman does not recall. The cameraman who sold all the footage somehow doesn't remember now what the 10 footage was. Very convenient of Ray to try to now stop any kind of dissemination about essentially more than one-tenth of all the alien autopsy footage.
Did you think, Bob, you were had?
At that point, absolutely. I turned to Fox and I said, look, we have these faces. We've asked NASA prior to this to do an enhancement of these faces. The same way you would take a 7-Eleven or convenience store video and you're trying to get the faces clear of these robbers that robbed a hypothetical 7-Eleven or convenience store, NASA would be called in by the law enforcement people to use something called algorithms to create computer enhancements that will focus directly on the facial features and find information within the image that, very technical, but basically finds information so clear that you could see the faces as if they were standing right in front of you. And not blurry, but fairly sharp. You'd see details of their ears, details of the facial structure, all of that. So sure enough, I asked NASA to do this. Actually, back in 95 or 6, I had asked them to do this. So we had this still image available. All we would have to do is match these people, living or dead, existing humans, and we would know whether or not it was made in 1947 or made in 1994 or 1995. So we did an investigation as part of World's Greatest Hoaxes, and we discovered, literally, that there was a guy named Elliot Willis who worked for a company called AK Music, a video, basically they made all kinds of video, low-level, low-budget stuff.
All right.
And Ray Santilli knew them, and Ray had asked them, or better yet, kind of wink-winked and said, if only you could make us an alien autopsy, I could sell it. So right away, I call Fox, and I said, look, not only do we now have the smoking gun, if you will, we have the origins of the fraud. We have the guy who worked at AK Music, who wasn't videotaped in, or filmed in 1947. He was videotaped in 1994 to show Ray Santilli that they could come up with an alien autopsy. Well, as our show World's Greatest Hoaxes showed very clearly, Elliot Willis, the individual who is in this image, clearly matches perfectly to what the NASA enhancement revealed. And you knew it was him. And he goes, I've been revealed. Come on, it's me. You know it's me. And I never liked this whole thing. What Ray asked us to do was kind of create what it would look like. No one ever said he was going to use it, for sure, as an alien autopsy until later on. And he said in our show that he was very surprised that Santilli asked them after they made the alien, the 10 footage part, Santilli said to them, could you do it better? Could you make it brighter? Could you do it where the cameras are pointing straight down on the alien, seeing all kinds of, like, organs coming out and stuff? And the people at AK Music said, we can't do that. You know, we're not like a Hollywood special effects company. So as our show indicated very clearly to the people, that we didn't know who made the bright scene in 1998, but we knew for sure now that the origin started when Ray asked these people to try to make an alien autopsy. And although it wasn't quite as good as Ray would like and actually made later, it was obvious it was the beginning of the hatching of the fraud.
Did Ray make big bucks on that Fox show?
You know, it's interesting you asked me that tonight, George. There was a Sky TV broadcast. It's a satellite channel in
out of England, right?
Out of England. And they did a show a month ago where they had Santilli come on with his characters, people around him. And I got to tell you, they're claiming now that they didn't make that much money. It is hands down. I don't care if you compare it to the Howard Hughes biography fraud, where Clifford Irving, a writer, fictitiously presented to the world that he had interviewed the reclusive Howard Hughes, and had a great, well, basically a biography that was just to die for, and he was now selling it, getting all kinds of money. That was probably hoax number one of the 20th century. Hoax number two of the 20th century, clearly, I think, it's arguably, I like to say, the Hitler Diaries, where a bunch of Germans got together and hatched a fraud where they claimed they had the actual handwritten diaries of the evil one, Adolf Hitler, remunerating about all his feelings and whatnot, and that was a huge fraud, maybe fraud number two. But fraud number three, only chronologically, the alien autopsy dwarfs financially the others.
That's what I
Santilli's
thought.
In the many millions of dollars.
Oh.
We are talking about a guy who not only created a fraud, but is continuing to do that.
Now, why, when we come back, Robert, why hasn't he been sued for fraud by the network? We'll be back. And welcome back with our guest, Robert Kiviat, as we talk about the alien autopsy. And we're going to get into some incredible things with Bob in just a moment as well. Robert, why didn't the network or anybody sue Santilli for fraud?
Things are just happening in a very slow time capsule way. Let me try to sum this up for everybody. It took 3 years for me to convince Fox between 1995 and 1998 that we could not leave sleeping dogs lying on this story, that there would be revelations to come. Clearly, the case looked very shaky by 98, and by the time World's Greatest Hoax was established, for most people, at least in the U.S., that the case had to be considered a fraud because one of the films is now proven to be completely an outright fabrication with this 10 footage and this Elliot Willis guy in our show showing himself clearly and coming and stepping out of the film, literally, and telling us the motivations of Ray Santilli and the company AK Music, we knew that now we had to stay on the case. So I kept asking Fox, let's try to get to the bottom of it sometime down the road. Yeah, I'm not claiming that we would have to do it in 98 because there wasn't enough to really chew on yet. We didn't have all the facts. But we were focusing very heavily on the leads that we had, and we had many, and we wanted to know where this brightly lit scene was made after Ray Santilli asked AK Music, could they make it better? Could they make this much more improved? And when AK Music said no, they must have turned to somebody else. So we didn't know who they turned to. And we racked our brains, and we spoke to everybody in the special effects community. And I know there are people in the special effects community that claimed it had to be a fraud because, come on, you know, even forgetting the 10-footers and all that revelation we made in World's Greatest Hoaxes, they claimed that if you could make one, and they could make them for movies, and many movies had made aliens, that there's no reason to believe this one was real. But that doesn't prove anything. Just saying that didn't prove anything. It required someone, either our production company, Fox, maybe together, to get to the bottom of it and find who made it. Well, the case became a cold case throughout 99, 2000. We did a bunch of new shows for Fox in 2000, one called UFOs, the best evidence ever caught on tape, number two. We did a show called Ghosts Caught on Tape, Fact or Fiction, again narrated by Jonathan Frakes from the Alien Autopsy shows, and also the UFOs Caught on Tape shows. And we asked everyone in the production of that show, what more could we add about the alien autopsy? There really wasn't anything to add. Whoever had made the bright scene, George, was remaining silent, and they weren't talking to anybody. And I mean anybody.
And Santilli wasn't telling anybody either.
Santilli seemed like he was ready to go down as one of those people that you never heard from again.
Yeah.
He put out his footage, and that was that. He made, I know, just with American airings alone, well over $500,000. So you could almost multiply that according to Time Magazine and some other people that covered the story. 32 countries aired their own versions of shows, not mine, other shows. So, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a great mathematician to know that he's probably made in the neighborhood of, you know, a few million dollars.
Gee.
So we don't necessarily have to look at that as a crime yet in the story, George. All we know in 2000, 2001 is there was no more evidence. The 10 footage wasn't enough, I don't think, to convince everyone around the world that the whole case was a fraud. So I kept asking people as many questions as I could throughout my travels, wherever I went. You know, I cover UFOs very much as part of my unexplained phenomena coverage for television. And nothing was happening, no news, until
Bingo.
A very interesting thing happened. One of the people that Ray Santilli had turned to help figure out how to market the alien autopsy footage, how to investigate it on his own before he brought it to people like me, was a guy named Philip Mantle. Philip Mantle was a very big UFO researcher in England.
Sure was.
Have you had him on your show before?
Yeah, we have had him.
Okay, good. So people know who Philip is. And Philip, who had become a very close confidant of mine in the World's Greatest Hoaxes production, he turned over all his information, anything he knew about Ray, and he was an insider with Ray way before I was. So he really knew the inside track. And now, after exposing the 10 footage with us, helping us do that, he had come to believe it was a fraud. However, he kept writing we had a kind of a shorthand term Philip and I would use throughout the early part of this, you know, 2000, 2001, 2002. Philip would write an article, let's say, in a wonderful guy who passed on, Graham Birdsall, in England, had a magazine called UFO Magazine. And Philip would write for this magazine in England, and he would do occasionally articles where he'd do update, alien autopsy, what do we know? And he would literally start, you know, teasing the idea that maybe real people had done the transfer from the old film to videotape so we all could see it in television. Maybe there were real people that handled real film. He would really tease this idea, but secretly, Philip and I had a term, he was calling those articles smoke screens. He wanted Ray Santilli to think he was still investigating from a believable point of view, but in reality, he was just putting out these sort of trial balloons to see who out there might contact him. Sure enough, he wrote an article in this magazine called UFO Magazine in England, and a guy contacted him. His name was Simon. And he said, Philip, I know who made the bright scene. Everyone talks about the alien autopsy. And I can put you in touch with this guy. Sure enough, Philip called me, and he said, Bob, I have this guy. I said I could put him in touch with you. Will you talk to Simon? I said, absolutely. Simon and I got on the phone together. I said, who is your guy? Who's your friend? He said, Bob, this is the guy who made it. He's a sculptor. He's a guy who does this for a living, for television and film. And he's the one who made it.
And is he in England or the United States?
He was an England-based creature effects sculptor that wanted, in 2002, to go and basically turn on the entire hoaxing team of Ray Santilli and all the people around Ray, and he wanted to come out and take credit for creating not only the creature we see, but take credit for cutting into the creature, being the surgeon. Let's get our head around what he was taking credit for in this phone call when I finally spoke to him in 2002, the actual creature effects guy.
All right.
The guy was taking credit for making the creature with animal parts, sheep brains, real biological material. You can only imagine what this must smell like.
So real guts.
Oh, absolutely. He killed the creature, made a cast, a conventional, maybe synthetic creature, if you will, very, very, you know, expertly created, and then, of course, filled it with real organs, real, honest-to-God, biological organs. So he's cutting and removing real organs. So the first thing he does is he makes a fabulous-looking creature that fooled a lot of people, just on the creature itself, as being a real biological creature. Some even suggested, and you know this from watching the show, of course, that maybe it was a deformed human.
Yes, that's right.
Could you imagine the credit, the amazing amount of complimentary commentary this guy was hearing, that people thought, number one, pathologists are saying in our show, pathologists, George, that they believed it was a real biological creature and maybe even a human deformed from radiation.
Or a child. Yeah.
Right. Turner syndrome and all these different things with six fingers and all that, and the enlarged head and the eyes. So it went way beyond for these two pathologists that we had on the show, and all around the world, many pathologists felt that this guy, we'll just call him John for the moment, John had created a biological creature, and then, to add amazement to this, he went and studied books on how to cut into a creature and how to remove. So you had the pathologist saying to our cameras, as you know, this was absolutely, they were either surgeons or pathologists that have done a fair share amount of autopsy.
And it's him, the sculptor maker.
Can you imagine? So this guy watches us all, and for 7 years he says nothing. Finally, in 2002, he's on the phone with me telling me the truth.
Why?
Because he wanted it out. He didn't. 2002, he had a manager on the phone. The manager was a business manager who handled all this guy's business, knew every check this guy got, knew every payment he got, knew everything about the alien autopsy involvement. So literally, if you were to bring this guy on, a witness stand in 2002, in a court, let's say, maybe the one of the key witnesses to testifying to the truthfulness of this guy's John story would be his business manager who handled all his money.
Right.
At a major accounting firm in England. And they do a lot more in England when you're an accountant. You handle the business. You may even get involved in legal contracts.
Your advisors.
Exactly. Everyone. This was, George, a top-notch firm that handled very, very prominent people. Putting me in touch now through the help of this guy, Simon, that read Philip's article. Just a smokescreen article, really, about all the little mysteries still lingering about it and all. But Philip, at this point, had already felt it was a fraud. And so, when I'm on the phone with this guy, John, his business manager is making me agree to, prior to this, in fact, and also after, a confidentiality agreement. And the confidentiality agreement would necessitated that I find a deal with a channel or network to tell the story of the true unraveling of the fraud, where John would step forward, take credit, show his props, show how he made it, maybe even make another one, whatever we do.
So he wanted another show.
He wanted another show, right. I, being a producer and hoping to put the final chapter on this, of course I want to do another show. Unfortunately, I must tell all your listeners, very few people in Hollywood cared. They felt world's greatest hoaxes had covered it. Ironically, I would go to meetings throughout Hollywood, talk to all the networks, and they would go to the internet invariably after my meeting.
Yeah.
And they would look and see Robert Kiviat and Fox and World's Greatest Hoaxes in 98 said it was a fraud, and it's a fraud. So they didn't really care about hearing about the guy who cut into the creature, who made the body, and I thought they were making a huge mistake. I spent all of 2002, most of 2003, getting rejected almost everywhere I went. Nobody wanted to hear more about this story in America. But on the other hand, around the world, people wouldn't stop talking about the alien autopsy.
Oh, they love this stuff.
Right. So the dichotomy between the American mentality about the alien autopsy, maybe 9/11 had something to do with it, maybe the idea of mystery and a government cover-up wasn't in vogue. Everybody wanted to get behind our president. I think we've all found out the smartness of that, but still our country pretty much got behind good old George. Not you, George, of course. George Bush.
No, behind me, they'd all get behind.
Yes, George Bush, you know, Jr., sort of. And all I could say right now is that I was miffed. So into 2004 we go, and I'm floored. I get a phone call, and I hear that there's a movie in development. And the movie is called Alien Autopsy.
Without your involvement, right?
Without me. I hear, this is what I'm hearing, that Ray Santilli convinced a writer and a film company that his story warranted a feature film, and that in this feature film, they were going to reveal the utter truth, the bigger, big story, the biggest story of the alien autopsy that I and other people just don't know about. And
you're going to have to tell me if you believe it, because I know what you're going to pop down on us. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the movie itself was basically that Ray Santilli really had film, and there really was an alien autopsy, and it really was shown to him by a cameraman. But the mystery about what the movie was going to say beyond that wasn't clear yet. The movie wasn't really in full production yet, so we really had to wait and watch. And so into 2004 and into early 2005, it became very clear now that Santilli got a major company behind the story, that they were now going to admit parts of it might be fake, but maybe not all of it. And I couldn't believe this. Now, of course, I'm trying to reach this guy, John, the special effects guy.
Right.
And he's been now pulled into the fold. He's now either part of the movie.
Nobody
knows what. And I don't know if you're going to do a break or not, but I have the rest of the story. I really have to.
We've got very 4 minutes, so we're okay.
Okay, so let me get the big gist out for everybody. Right. The movie is put out by a company called QWERTY Films, but it's being distributed by Warner Brothers. The movie, and as the early stage it looked like in 2004, 2005, was going to be a major feature, and the people starring in it are the two guys that started the American Idol show in England before there was American Idol. The people that, like Ryan Seacrest, actually. Ryan Seacrest and another guy, Brian Dunkelman. These two, when American Idol came out in America, were emulating the first two hosts
right.
of the Pop Idol show in England. And those two guys were called Ant and Dec.
That's true.
And Ant and Dec now are playing Ray Santilli and Gary Shufield, the two guys behind the alien autopsy fraud, in the movie called
Amazing.
Alien Autopsy.
So Santilli's going to make another small fortune on this movie.
We can only imagine Ray was paid a lot of money for his rights, and the story that they're spinning would make a ufologist cringe. It would make a logical person go, what? And the story is so incredible that I would really challenge anyone to not chuckle when they hear this. But it's a major motion picture. It was released on April 7th in the UK. It did very well in the UK. It looks like it'll be widely distributed around the world. But there's good news for everybody. And I guess when we come back from break, we'll talk a little more about it. The bottom line is that the movie proposes something that a new special that I've just produced and will be airing around the world in the wake of this movie called Alien Autopsy, the true story will tell the true story. And the true story is not what the movie presents. It's actually the story you're hearing tonight unfold with me.
And while this unfolds, Robert, let me ask you right now. Do you believe that in 1947 something crashed at Roswell, New Mexico, that might have been out of this world?
There's no doubt. But I don't know if it was exactly Roswell. And that's something we'll have to talk about.
Right.
But I do believe there is no doubt in 1947, and many years after, as you know from your research and many of the listeners know from their own copious studying of all the information out there, that there was a massive amount of secret organizations set up in 1947. The NSA, CIA, all that owe their origins to 1947. Very strange death of James Forrestal, former secretary, you know, but there's no doubt. Something happened in 1947.
They said he jumped out of his window.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at all the facts, they're a very fascinating little book. When you ask this one question, a fascinating book most people don't associate with UFOs is a book called Blank Check, written by Tim Weiner, a Philadelphia Inquirer reporter, won awards for his coverage, actually, on the black budget programs of our government. And if you look at what happened in 1947, just in terms of setting up these organizations in our government that could access millions and millions, if not billions of dollars for whatever under black covert budgets, there's no doubt something happened in 1947 that boggles the mind that would have allowed that kind of a building of those kind of secret organizations. And I say secret, I mean they can do whatever they want to do in the interest of our protecting the American, you know, American way, American interest. So when we see what's going on right now in Iraq and everywhere else, it's not new, George. It's not new.
Not new at all. Well, right. When we come back, Robert Giviat, tell us all about what you uncovered. It's an incredible story. You're going to sit back and just shake your head. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in just a moment as we get to the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Robert, let's pick up where we left off. What have you been uncovering?
Well, by the way, I just want to kind of sum this up best for the listeners and for you, if I can, George. The belief that there's actual footage, actual evidence of UFO and alien contact that our government may have or has kept hidden for whatever reasons they may have decided to do that, is one of the things that drives me in my television work, and it's the exact thing that Ray Santilli was waving in front of me and many other people. So just because of that basic synchronicity, if you will, I ended up dealing with Ray Santilli. Never did I take it at face value that this was real, that it was proven footage in any way, shape, and form. The story was shaky from the beginning, but the video or film evidence was shockingly compelling.
What did you say to yourself the first time you saw that film?
That the story would be amazing no matter what it turned out to be. If it was a special effect, it was done in such a way that truly needed to be looked at as a piece of art, amazing work of art. Also, there would be fraud. There would be all kinds of, you know, fiscal, financial concerns, everything. So the story had so many layers to it that I knew it was just a great story as a journalist, no matter what it was. But as somebody that believed that there probably was, as you asked me before the break, proof of probably contact near the Roswell event, maybe it happened sometime a little before or after that weekend in July of 1947, but either way, too many people had come to my television cameras, many other documentarians before me, talking about what they had seen, either real evidence of aliens and UFOs crashed from another planet, whatever, or they had seen film footage, video footage. Even Gordon Cooper, an astronaut, had said he had seen a landing of a craft that clearly was not ours. So when you had this kind of unimpeachable kind of testimony, it drives you to keep looking for the evidence. Now, Ray Santilli knew that in 1995, and amazingly, as we're about to, you know, you'll hear this now, he still believes that's the ticket for him. To keep telling people that everything he did was based on real proof, real film, of either the Roswell crash aliens or other aliens in the government's possession.
And is this film that he saw, or does he have, or did he just believe it?
Well, you tell me. Let's let the listeners know right now, on what this movie that just premiered in England is.
Called Alien Autopsy.
Called Alien Autopsy. Somehow, Ray Santilli shrugged off the fact that we had exposed most of the fraud's intent, what it was trying to do back in 98. He shrugged off the idea that most Americans now doubt the case, thanks to the work we did at Fox. And even though people around the world were slightly less sure, there's no question that Ray felt there was another layer to this he could exploit. He convinced a writer, maybe he was nervous, let's remind everybody that before the break what we were talking about, maybe he was nervous that John, the sculptor guy who had created the alien, who acted like the surgeon in the film that I knew back in 2002 was the guy, but no one in Hollywood wanted to let me tell the story as a normal special, television special, so I had to pretty much shelve the idea, tell John no can do, but because of my confidentiality agreement, which stipulated that unless he went public on his own or came out through some other public domain way, that I would have to keep my mouth shut. So I did keep my mouth shut until I started to hear about this movie. The movie's premise, as I understood it now back in mid-2005, was that Ray Santilli somehow got John, the same special effects guy he got to do his fake, the bright scene, the whole nine yards, for the movie too. When it was announced to Philip Mantle, and this is what the television viewers will see when my new show, Alien Autopsy, The True Story, airs in England. They'll hear the whole story that I'm telling you now, that Philip Mantle literally turned over his clues to me. I investigated this guy, John. Clearly, John Humphrey is his name. Clearly was the right guy. He clearly had convinced me he was the guy who made the bright scene and all that, but I couldn't tell anyone. Now Ray was upping the ante. Ray was telling the film company and Warner Brothers, I'll get the same guy who faked my original one, I'll get him to make the one for the movie. Now, the movie's premise was not really clear until it came out.
And now, isn't it a comedy? Somebody told me it's a comedy, Bob.
Well, let me tell you what this comedy is. First of all, they came to me and they asked me, the film company, could they include the show with Jonathan Frakes, the Fox show, part of it, in the movie? Knowing that that would kind of ingratiate me with them and maybe even give my television show a chance to remind viewers it was an investigation, we weren't sure, maybe that would help create clarity for the viewer. But yes, I knew by putting it in the movie or allowing them to license the show from me, because I do control the rights to the show.
You do.
That I would basically be putting in something real that they would have to deal with in the movie. But yes, George, it was a comedy as planned. But now that the movie's out in England for 3 weeks, and my show has not been on the air yet, still being finished, let's tell the viewers, listeners and viewers, everybody out there, what this is going to be. The movie was shown to me in my home by a Warner Brothers affiliated person back as part of the deal I made to let me use it in the show, my show in the movie. And literally, I saw it before anybody had a chance to see it. So I'm telling everybody now about the movie. Let's get down to it. The movie proposes that Ray Santilli went to Florida to get footage from an old cameraman in the movie played by Harry Dean Stanton, by the way, the musician and actor and all that. Harry Dean Stanton plays the old cameraman. Ray Santilli is played by this guy, you know, Anton Deck playing Gary and Ray, the two guys that brought the footage to me and Fox.
Well known in the UK.
You got it. These two guys are portraying the pop idol or American Idol host, if you will, for England, are portraying Ray and Gary, and they go to Florida, or Ray goes to Florida, and the cameraman shows Ray the real film, or real alien autopsy, government retrieval of the alien, the crash scene, the craziness of all the Jeeps going back and forth, the whole nine yards, the Roswell event caught on film. Ray, so excited, according to the movie, and somewhat of the real story as Ray has told it for up until this point, I guess, that he went and tried to find a financer to go buy the film from the cameraman. Took 2 years to get the money to go buy the film. Finally, when he went back to buy the film, he paid the guy, took the film reels, but the film reels, when he brought them back to show everybody in England, had all in some way degenerated, George, had somehow become completely unwatchable. Everything he had seen on a wall or a screen at the cameraman's home in Florida was now garbage. You couldn't see it. The film itself was basically useless, but there were just this is what the movie proposes now. there was just a few frames, maybe a little bit of real, I don't know how much, of the alien they were able to preserve. And they used that as a template to fake all the footage that we now know as the alien autopsy scene. So they turned to the special effects guy, John Humphreys. They asked him to create everything that the little bit of film they still could see seemed to show. And these frames, if you follow the logic now, are the, like I said, the template, the foundation of what John, the special effects guy, used to create the scene that we see. And here's the real kicker. They make the analogy now in the movie, and Ray's made it to me up in the last few weeks. They were haggling back and forth here. You heard about my new expose show telling the whole story about John Humphreys, the whole nine yards, how he was going to come out with me just 3 years ago and tell the story before Ray was able to put a movie deal together, George, and shut everybody up. Ray's pretty good. You got to give this guy credit. He's a mover and a shaker, and he's really a flim-flam man of the highest order.
He doesn't stop, does he?
That never stops. And here's the kicker. He's saying now that these frames that he was able to use as the template for faking or restoring the film are analogous to when you take, let's say, Leonardo da Vinci work or something that's very degraded on a wall, and you ask painters to come in and embellish and make it more readable. You can see the image and all. That's what he did. I mean, that's so nonsensical, I can't even imagine how you wouldn't start chuckling when somebody says, no, I didn't fake it with a cameraman, I didn't fake it with a special effects guy. I actually restored 17 minutes of film with five frames.
And in the meantime, people, Bob, who are truly trying to get this message out,
right,
can't get the kind of coverage that Santilli gets or the funding.
But I'll tell you what's interesting, George. Even though that's true, the film company or someone connected to the film, they show something 45 seconds worth toward the end of the movie, which is worth everyone going to the theater and seeing this. I don't want to help that movie per se necessarily, but I think it's interesting to see. They show you a snippet of what this footage Ray Santilli seems to have, still in his hands, let's say, looks like. Now, to this day, as I finish my new production called Alien Autopsy, The True Story, I don't know what this 45-second or so, maybe my memory might be off, might be a minute, is. In the movie, it's presented as the restored, fixed, better yet, retrieved image off the reels.
Of the real stuff.
Of the real stuff. And, George, it makes you swallow. It is a very... It's a very intriguing 45 seconds.
So you've seen it?
Oh, yeah. I've seen the entire movie.
All right.
And now Ant and Dec, at the end of the movie, playing Ray and Gary, are telling the world, we didn't fake it. We restored it because we knew it was real, but it got somehow damaged by being exposed to oxygen air after 50 years sitting in a can and all that stuff. Down in Florida, you know, where the weather is very humid.
Well, that's a pretty compelling argument, isn't it?
It's insane, but the newspaper, it's compelling, but it's sort of like, wait a minute, when you stop and think, all right, let's get down to it. You've got a couple of frames in your hand, maybe showing an alien, maybe showing nothing more than a flash of light. Who knows what it's showing? How does that lead to a 17-minute autopsy?
Yes.
And if you were to show me now, an actual frame showing me the alien with a piece of his body coming out of him, you know, and the doctor's taking something out. And maybe you go and make a little bit of a scene and you say, this is a recreation of what we are seeing here on the left side of the screen of the film, the actual frames we have, and on the right side or left, other side of the screen is a restoration, if you will, or recreation. But they're not saying that. They're saying that when you watch a 17-minute film, some sections of the real image, and some of the parts of this guy John created with other people.
So what's your gut tell you? I mean, based on based on his track record.
Track record, George, it doesn't even make sense. How can you have a few frames, literally, put onto, let's say, an actual metal reel, let's say, and then you add on faked footage to those 4, 5, 10, 50, 30 frames?
You can't do it.
No sense. You wouldn't even get a judge in a court to take you seriously. You'd go, that doesn't make sense. That's like comparing apples and canaries, and it doesn't even make sense. But that's his claim now. So as the moviegoers leave the theater and they watch this, they're going to be scratching their head going, did Ray really have real film? And did he just simply recreate what somehow got disintegrated by oxygen, air, the atmosphere, whatever? I mean, that's nonsensical. But there are people now apparently talking about it on the Internet. There are articles being written all over the world. The people that have seen the movie in England, English newspapers all over the place, are putting in even the stalwart London Times, Sunday Times in London, which I will be showing in my new show, actually give Ray the last word in the article they wrote recently, where they do expose that this guy John Humphreys made the alien, did all the work on it, created the scene, acted as a surgeon, all that. But then they say, but Ray Santilli claims it's a restoration. Like, I mean, how can anyone write that?
This guy's the Teflon man.
You got it. That's him. So now my job is to try to get the truth out to everybody that this guy, John Humphreys, did come out to me in 2002, wanted to tell his story. I kept my confidentiality agreement very, very fairly. Now he's out there spinning the story a little bit differently. But the one thing that they're not saying is, how does this restoration claim make sense? It doesn't even pass the non-ridiculous test. It is nonsensical.
What Santilli has tapped into, though, Bob, and you know this, is he knows that people want to believe, and he's using that.
And he's threatening everybody. And he's threatening everybody that even if it was considered at one point public domain footage because a military cameraman supposedly shot it, now he's claiming, oh, listen, I'm taking credit for creating it with this guy, John. It's now a fake film, or restoration, if you will, and I now want to control its copyright, and I want to make sure everybody pays me more money. It is mind-boggling. But I will say this. At the end of this show, the new show I did, I show people an interesting story. In the 1970s, apparently, the Disney Company, and according to our person in the show named Michael Maloney, a Royal Academy press photographer, a guy who's been given major, major anointments by the Queen herself. This is a very, very high-end guy. He comes on the show, Alien Autopsy, The True Story, and he says, I was taken to a home in the 70s near a Disney animator's home, and I was working with the Disney animators to get press for one of their movies, and one thing led to another, and I was taken to a home, and I was shown a film that looked just like the Alien Autopsy that was revealed in 95 in 1978. Only in this film that he saw, there was a creature on the table, look very similar to what would later be known as Alien Autopsy, but there's also a special edition. There's a living creature, a living alien that looked just like the one being cut open on the in the corner, moving around.
Shivering, probably.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't know what to make of it, but it looked, don't forget, a Royal Academy press photographer. His eyes are golden, George. It's
absolutely.
What he's known for, his eyes.
You believe him?
He said, yeah, absolutely. He said, this film existed in 1978. So I asked this guy, John, back in 2002. I've yet to ask him lately for the new show. We'll see if he'll talk to me. But I asked him back in 2002, did Ray ever show you anything that ever gave you any kind of help in creating this thing? Not only did he blow the whole idea about restoration out the water early before whatever was presented by
right.
saying, no, I was never shown anything by Ray Santilli, nothing official, nothing not official, no pictures, nothing. I made it up with my own imagination and what I knew about the Roswell case from reading about it, witnesses and whatnot. He never said he saw anything from Ray Santilli. And then all of a sudden now, that's sort of what he's saying. So how is it possible that his memory got a little different 3 years later to make this movie sort of happen?
What if Ray Santilli, Bob, is a disinformation specialist?
No, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
of.
That the government or government said, hey, let's let people think this is so ludicrous.
Well, George, I asked him that. Actually, just about 3 weeks ago, I'm on the phone with Ray.
You mean he talks to you still?
Oh, you better believe it. Ray was threatening to sue everybody. Ray said, Bob, if you put this new show on, which is really a reversion of my former show, Alien Autopsy, Factor Fiction, we show the earlier part of the show, and then we come in with a hammer, George, and we nail it one way. We nail it once and for all,
right.
A to Z, you know? And Ray got so upset with me, he tracked me down, said, Bob, how could you do this? I was willing to work with you on this, actually, and tell you the big, big, big story. But now that you've decided to do this and become, you know, the hoax buster, yeah, essentially, my words, not his.
The Antichrist, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we can work together. I said, Ray, work. I want the truth from you, finally. Give me the truth. He goes, Bob, the truth will blow your mind. I said, tell me the truth. The new truth, the new expanded truth, even beyond the movie's truth that I told you guys just now, the new truth is military assistance. He is implying that military U.S., military assistance was given to him to restore the film. Let me simplify this. He's suggesting that he will produce a person from our own military loop, if you will, that will say, listen, Santilli was shown real film by a cameraman. It disintegrated. We, i.e., military, government, whatever, provided him and his special effects guy with photos, images from a vault, if you will. So Ray is suggesting that's what the core story is, that the military or something like the military has helped him in the restoration. So they got real images of real kind in front of these people.
When does it end, Robert?
It doesn't seem to ever end with this guy.
Stay with us. We're going to bring in a cameraman, a UFO videographer in a moment. His name is Jeff Willis, to talk with us about some of the incredible things he has found, he has spotted. He's collected about 50 hours of solid UFO video. And, of course, Bob will stay with us in this conversation. Jeff Willis has been researching UFOs and related phenomena for a total of 25 years. His initial interest in aliens didn't start with a simple UFO sighting. He has been having sightings of UFOs and other odd experiences since 1975, and in 1987, at the age of 17, he moved to Phoenix from Seattle with his family. Skywatching became his full-time activity after getting his video camera in 1995. Jeff has now been able to get at least 50 hours of solid UFO video. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. It's great to be back on the show again.
Absolutely. I know you were with Art about a year ago, I think, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And Bob, let's bring you into Bob, explain the relationship with Jeff here.
Well, shortly after we did the first show called UFOs, the Best Evidence Ever Caught on Tape, that was focusing purely on UFO footage at Fox, we heard about Jeff. Jeff was one of the first people to present footage of the famous Phoenix Lights event in March 13, 1997. And Jeff was prolific in getting a very important shot that constituted a package of footage that showed what happened back on that day, famous day in ufology in Phoenix. And we stayed focused on that, on Jeff after that. We actually, Jeff was very active in getting in touch with our offices here in Los Angeles, letting me know what he was doing as a video hunter. We had not really heard the term video hunter before. I don't know if Jeff was actually calling himself that. Jeff, you could tell me in a minute. But I know we were starting to hear that term very, very at the beginning stage of 1997. So I determined, after seeing Jeff on a couple of news reports and knowing that Jeff was a diligent UFO videographer, that whether he was a UFO hunter or not, he sure acted like one. And I knew that he was so diligent. He would grab his camera. He would keep me up to date. Even when we weren't in production on a show, he would say, Bob, I just got a clip. You got to see it. And we stayed in contact. We developed this relationship. I must tell you that every time Jeff sent me a new DVD or a VHS copy of his footage, it was always better and better. First, it was maybe what we'd call, you know, lights in the sky performing in ways that, you know, didn't appear to be flares in any way, shape, and form, under the objects under their own control at night and then in daytime. Then as the footage would get better, we would start to see some sort of almost like saucer-like shape in daylight, blue sky. We were just starting to get more and more impressed. Then the movement of the objects started to get more impressive, circle each other, flip-flop, turn over on each other, just amazing stuff. In fact, it was matching a little bit of what we were seeing out of Mexico. And in an interview Jeff did from my new show that I'm working on, Jeff, by the way, is going to be featured in the Alien Autopsy Update Exposé by showing people at the end of the show what a real flying saucer, in this case on its side, I think something that he talked to Art about, right, Jeff? You've talked to Art about this before.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about my various footage.
Right, this saucer, I got to tell you, is a very big featured item in both the Alien Autopsy True Story show and the another new show I'm working on, where we're going to do a whole Jeff Willis segment, literally. And the bottom line is that Jeff is capturing footage that you must say, without a doubt, is real, not faked. It is absolutely, like I said, it's grown to being the latest, I got to tell you, maybe not the latest in terms of dates, because I think it's a couple of years old, but when you see this flying, domed, structured craft, as Jeff says in the interview he just gave me, you know, it's incredible. It is absolutely a quintessential flying saucer, metallic, reflective. I mean, what else can you say? So, when people see this in the new show, they're going to realize that whatever Ray Santilli had on film, recreated, restored, it doesn't matter. This kind of footage is showing the footage Jeff has been able to get, and the most recent clips, of course, you know, including this dome saucer. There's no doubt there is some sort of, and by the way, this saucer appears to repel from his home, literally as if it's defying gravity. It seems to move. Jeff will give you all the details in a minute, but it seems to move in ways I've never seen before, all caught on video, in camera, no cuts, happens right before your eyes, got to be one of the best clips ever presented to anyone. Jeff, maybe you can tell us some more about it.
And Jeff, are you just in the right place at the right time? I mean, at least 50 hours of great UFO video, and I haven't seen one in my life.
Well, what you have to do, basically, it's a lot more than 50 hours now. It's quite a bit, maybe three times as much.
Really? Okay.
But that's what it, you know, my bio used to be. But what you really have to do is you have to put yourself in the position to where you're going to videotape these things. And the only way to do that is to spend thousands of hours outside hunting these things down or going to UFO hotspots. I often check the UFO Reporting Center for hot areas,
mm-hmm.
Go out to the location with eyewitnesses, people that have seen the craft in these areas, and we get the video camera rolling, and, you know, sometimes we get lucky, sometimes we don't.
Explain to us through your eyes of your camera, Jeff, what has been some of the most compelling things you've seen?
Well, Bob, what Bob just described to you is by far, I think, the most compelling footage that I've shot today.
You got to understand, just interject, George, this is a flying domed craft over his house.
In
he
broad
comes
daylight.
Out to his house. This is over his home. It all happens right on tape. I mean, it is unimpeachable. It is absolutely what it appears to be, whether it's an unknown military device that we've never heard of before, or whether it's an alien craft from an unknown planet, that remains a mystery. But I've never seen in my sky, George, of you, above my homes here in Los Angeles or any, I've not seen a domed flying craft, metallic, apparently defying gravity, no known form of propulsion seen. I mean, it flies away. We estimate this, what, Jeff? It flies away maybe a mile in like a second?
Yeah, and another thing is it does a U-turn on a dime, which is pretty amazing. Basically, I do have some theories on it. There is the location that I shot the UFO is around the Superstition Mountain area, and Superstition Mountain is notorious for UFO reports, and I a lot of daylight reports as well. And you know, sure enough, you set up a video camera around the location. Like I said before, it's only a matter of time before you start videotaping these things because they are real and they are in our skies.
Are you seeing, like in Phoenix, these large triangular-shaped objects, Jeff?
Absolutely. I've videotaped at least three triangular-shaped objects. One is recent, is March 6th. The 20th of this month, I videotaped some more lights north of my house, and I will have that video up on my website tomorrow. And by the way, my website's UFOsoverphoenix.com, and I do keep track of these objects all the time. I'm out there all the time waiting for these things.
You better have a good server, Jeff, or we're going to crush it tonight.
And by the way, George, Jeff is one of the people that we focused on the last couple of years, and at the same time we were focusing on Jeff, another group of people have emerged, individuals mainly, but in different parts of the world. One guy has just presented a cache of footage to me that I must tell you will drive my next 2 years of programming. So now it's not only Jeff. I don't want people to think that Jeff Willis is the only person. He's one of the most dedicated and one of the most successful in what he does. But there are other people starting to emerge now that are shooting things that are mind-boggling. And I must tell people that anyone who suggests that there's not a lot of UFO footage being amassed must be either on another planet, literally, or not doing their homework. There's more UFO footage of the flying saucer variety and things that look like actual structured, I would say, craft in the neighborhood of like a Star Trek episode that are being shot both above the Earth and in space, George. And the only thing that I think people need to recognize is that our TV industry, our film industry, are not really focusing on the true information. And we do our best. You and, by the way, I want to compliment you, George. If it wasn't for, as you and, I guess, without a doubt, your listeners heard tonight, you and Art talking tonight, if it wasn't for you and Art Bell keeping this information flowing, people recognize that there's a lot of things happening in our sky that can't be explained as, you know, hoaxes or frauds or things like a Ray Santillius bolt. There's absolute evidence that there are unknown craft in our skies, and Jeff and a few other people are doing the really hard work. There's one case in particular we're looking at, if you can imagine. A guy was out filming what appears to be glowing flying saucers, similar to what Jeff shot, but at night, coming in an amazing display, almost like a fleet of UFOs. Sometime later in the early morning, as it starts to get bright, at dawn, a helicopter, a Sikorsky helicopter, a military helicopter, comes in about 10 yards over the ground, literally hovering above this house for maybe 30 minutes as it does the most extraordinary scientific testing I've ever seen a helicopter do. It opens up a huge doorway, a huge camera starts shooting massive pictures. I've never seen anything like it. When the public sees the kind of footage, besides Jeff Willis, that guys are shooting with this other guy I'm telling you about, where a Sikorsky military helicopter is studying him after he shot one of the most extraordinary UFO events at night I've ever seen, people are going to be floored. And I make this comment, by the way, to you, George, about people that have claimed that there's not a lot of UFO footage being shot.
Right.
I can't sugarcoat this. This came from Steven Spielberg himself. In the course of promoting the War of the Worlds movie, Steven, who I'd love to invite to my offices any day you'd like, he's not too far from me here in L.A., come and see all the footage that it's being amassed since my last Fox shows, or even during the Fox shows and all the other material we've aired. How could he claim that there is not, paraphrasing, any good UFO footage being shot by all these video cameras around the world when there was more, he's implying there was more evidence of photos back in the 70s when he was working on Close Encounters and whatnot, and it's very disappointing, and he doesn't think he'll ever see proof of UFOs. Who's gotten to this guy?
Yeah, I was going to say, just Jeff's material alone
exactly.
Should convince him.
Now, I respect his films a lot and would love the opportunity to talk to him more about this, but what motivates a statement like that? I have no idea. So all he would have to do is watch any of the Fox shows I've done. Some other producers, especially on cable, have shown a lot of the footage too. What's wrong with that statement? It doesn't seem to even be grounded in a pop culture recognition. No one's recognizing right now that there's a lot of footage. The only problem is TV people seem more interested in things like American Idol, dramatic TV shows about the subject maybe, like Invasion, or shows that have been canceled like Threshold on CBS. You know, I got to tell you, it's time we got our eyes open, and Jeff is helping, and many other people are making it obvious as unknowns in our sky.
Jeff, are you convinced that whatever you've been videotaping is from another land, another world?
Absolutely, because of the fact that the motions and the movements that these objects do, there's no way that we have anything like that. Because why would we keep objects, if these are military-made objects, why would we hide these? We would be using them in war right now. Don't you think that we would use the best things that we had in Iraq?
You would think so.
Yeah, you would think so. Now, if some of them are military secret projects, you know, I'm open to it, but I'm also open to some of these, the movements that some of these objects make. As far as I'm concerned, there's no way that they're military.
Have you ever been able to see or make out, Jeff, inhabitants of these craft?
No, I've never seen an alien in the window of these things or anything like that. However, I'm still looking for that shot.
Wouldn't that be something? Oh my, if you could get that one.
George, there's a footage, there's a sequence in the one of the other guys we're talking to right now, besides Jeff, where we do see that very much image you're referring to. And it's the first time ever that we've seen an entity on a videotape which seems to be entering the craft that might well be what you're talking about. So we do have some new footage that may indeed show that. And I don't think one could categorically say it's fake. So what we have to look at now is do the hard evidence checking, but you're going to see some very impressive footage of an entity apparently being beamed back up to a ship on video coming out soon.
Does that bother you, Bob, when so many people are faking some of this evidence?
Well, I'll tell you, outside of Ray Santilli, I don't think I have seen outright proof that anyone has ever presented an image like Jeff Willis has that proved to be fake. There might well be a couple of times I recall a very wobbly UFO that was shown on Mexican television by a building that we were looking at back in, when we were doing World's Greatest Hoaxes on Fox, that looked very much like it must be either amateurishly done in a computer or some kind of, not a great job on a special effect. And, of course, we know about a guy named Billy Meyer in Switzerland.
Oh, yes.
That apparently was able with one arm. You got to give a guy a lot of credit. Sadly, he had been handicapped years before in a bus accident, and literally had one arm, and with one arm in the 70s, he was able to float some sort of craft that and clearly fake some. Now, did every image result as a fake by Billy Meyer? Well, we did a show in World's Greatest Hoaxes. We show this. It looks like his wife pretty much showed his ex-wife. You know those ex-wives can be, guys, right? Well, the ex-wife came and showed implements, literally covers to garbage can lids, that Billy used in some of his most extraordinary images.
For a pretty sophisticated garbage can list.
Yeah, but I will say this. He had an entire, ufological, kingdom going at one point in the 70s and 80s, where people were flocking to his farm in Switzerland. Right, Jeff? I mean, you know this. People were literally coming to his farm,
yes,
saying, hey,
true,
come on. But the bottom line is, not believable. Most of it seems to be fake. But you take the Jeff Willis image and some of this other stuff I'm referring to that we're about to unveil, I don't think we're talking about fakery here.
Was there anything you videotaped, Jeff, that you eventually could have identified as being man-made?
Well, yeah, we tape a lot of stuff in the sky, and when we play it back, we rule out, you know, the stuff that maybe could be balloons or it could be a misidentification, like a, you know, reflection off of a plane that just made the plane look saucer-shaped in the sky, stuff like that. Because I tape, you know, hundreds of hours of stuff, and when we boil it all down, we get to the bottom of it, and we present all of the stuff that is truly unknown and strange. And basically what does it for me is if the object isn't making a strange maneuver or if it doesn't look like a flying saucer or some sort of V-shaped triangle object or something strange in the sky, you know, I can pretty much, you know, rule it out, rule out anything conventional and just get down to, hey, you know, this is something unknown in the sky that, you know, we need to present to the public, to show the public that these things are in the sky and these things are unknown objects.
You're going to keep watching the skies, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, by the way, a group of people also watching not the skies but space right now are all the astronauts that go into space on any of these new missions, guys. You know, the amount of footage has been captured by astronauts through the space shuttle missions and the Mir missions and the International Space Station, it's mind-boggling that the government does not share what has been recorded down on the Earth of these downlinks from NASA's imagery. So I got to tell you, not only in space, but also in our skies, you can actually show some of the same images or craft, if you will, that have been videotaped in space seem to be coming into our own atmosphere, and you can actually make a case, I believe, that we have the same kind of objects both in space and in our skies.
Stay with us. We'll be back with questions with our guest, Bob Kiviat. And Jeff, thanks, and keep watching the skies for us. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment, and welcome back. I'm George Norrie. Bob, tell us a little bit about the collection of ghost video and footage you have assembled.
We did a show back in 2000 called Ghost Caught on Tape, Factor Fiction, which really got into what is really a mixed bag, George, in our society and really around the world, of what might be bona fide images of maybe disembodied spirits caught on film, caught on video, caught on photographic still imagery. I mean, there's a wide range of evidence from the ridiculous to sublime to impressive. Probably in the last couple of years, the most extraordinary case of a possible disembodied spirit, a classic ghost, caught on film or tape in any way, happened at Hampton Court Palace in England a couple of years ago. Around the holidays, a couple of years ago, Christmas, New Year period.
It's always the holidays, too, for these things.
Yeah, a security camera caught what appeared to be a glowing, wildly dressed, glowing human form opening and closing fire exit doors outside of an area at this very famous former castle of King Henry VIII. A lot of weird stuff went on in that particular reign, if you know what I mean, all kinds of killing, whatnot. And beyond that, I mean, the imagery speaks for itself. What occurred was security guards at this castle, a tourist attraction, had noticed that every now and then these darn fire exit doors, were opening on their own. So they decided to set up cameras a little more forcefully, make sure they got something, if indeed anything was happening. And sure enough, one particular night, they caught, first of all, they were made aware that the fire exit doors were opening again. The cameras were trained on right where they had to be. And you see, without a doubt, a glowing form. There's no question. It looks like a guy dressed in old kind of... you would imagine maybe in the medieval times, some kind of a very strange...
Kind of looks like Henry VIII.
Without a doubt. What you end up with is something that is either a fake involving the entire museum or castle, if you will. Doesn't seem to make sense that the palace would literally stage their own fraud. So a lot of experts in England looked into it. It happened in England, of course. And it made the news, George, all over the world. All over the world, including right here in good old Los Angeles, you saw a straight-faced newscaster get up and say, this is apparently not a hoax.
And we had a little clip on our own website, Bob, on that. And it was a strange thing. It looked like a Henry VIII figure, as you've said, kind of overlooking that door balcony. It was weird.
So we decided to contact them, and we're hoping to add in one of our new shows a thorough investigation of what occurred, a dissection, no pun intended, of the footage. It does appear to be bona fide security camera footage from the actual palace. So unless the security guard team was pulling sort of a fraud on themselves, I don't see any other explanation to say true mystery and maybe the best ghost I've ever seen caught on good quality imagery. So that's one of the big cases that we're looking at. Unfortunately, I must tell your listeners, I've not seen any real quality footage of ghosts caught on tape that rivals what I just described. We had an entire Fox show, and maybe four or five clips, one of a disembodied, apparently a black mass forming in a room out of nowhere, just dazzled people when we showed that. Apparently a mist of some kind that apparently followed a researcher down into a dungeon or an old basement, if you will, of a castle. That seemed to come right toward the camera. And again, we don't have a lot of great imagery in existence of what might be the classic ghost. So I point out for your listeners, this Hampton Court Palace footage is a must-see, and we'll be getting it ready for air, we hope, this year. So
very
good. It's really an extraordinary case.
To the phones we go, west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Adam. I live in Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
Absolutely.
It's in southeast Missouri.
Which could have been a crash site of a UFO many years ago, Adam. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was wondering if you think this UFO thing is a government, active government cover-up to keep it under wraps because they don't have anything they can do about it yet. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, the classic answer, and George, you probably know this so well because you've covered it so well, so great on the radio, and art before you. You know the classic thing that happens when you try to investigate what the government has on file? They have something called the Freedom of Information Act.
Uh-huh.
And literally, you know, you can get old documents released to you.
All marked out, by
you
the
get
way.
This document, it is basically 99% black magic markers of the entire thing and four words that say, it was a nice day. So you tell me, are they covering anything up?
We witnessed scene. It's all blacked out. And then the all blacked out.
Exactly.
Came down and all blacked out.
Yeah, and I love this because it looks to me that the average person does not get that that's an outright cover-up right on that face value right there.
Absolutely.
The
national security, though.
Yes. So they couch it in, we'd love to tell you, we're not covering it up, but we can't tell you, darn it, because it's going to hurt national security. Sounds like a cover-up to me.
Well, thanks for taking my question. I appreciate it. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Great, Adam. Thanks. Appreciate it. The Cape Girardeau, of course. My son graduated from college there a couple of years ago. That's first, Rush Limbaugh did, too. Did you know that? First-time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, my name is Paul. I'm calling from San Marcos, Texas.
Sure, Paul. Go ahead.
I'm a first-time caller, and I just started listening to your show, and I love it, by the way.
Great. How'd you find us?
I don't know. I was at work, and I was just tuning in to see what I could get on my AM radio. And
there we were.
There you were. I just had a question for your guest.
Sure.
I was just wondering, can you see UFOs at nighttime?
Well, there's no question the classic quintessential sighting in our society for the last 40, 50, 60 years has been the nighttime event, a glowing object. You can't ascertain it's a plane. You can't say it's a helicopter. You can't say, you're not really sure what it is, but the fact you can see it in the nighttime sky glowing or pulsating or emitting its own light source, that's a classic UFO sighting. But the thing that I was trying to bring out with Jeff Willis tonight, the guy on the line earlier, is that he is capturing flying metallic domed craft in bright blue daylight skies without, you know, 40, 50, 50, 60 feet off the ground. So you're talking about the opposite of that. The trouble with nighttime footage, and it happens a lot, to answer your question, nighttime footage might be the majority of UFO footage and UFO sightings in existence. But the bad news about dark nighttime footage is, largely, there's not a lot of frame of reference. So you end up with a dark sky, even on a good piece of video footage. You don't see clouds. You don't see buildings. All you really see is a dark black sky and a light or a shaped object performing some aerodynamic maneuvering. So that's the problem. Nighttime footage is mostly what we get, but it's probably the least impressive. The most impressive footage, I believe, are the daylight right in your face, reflecting sunlight, metal struts on it, without a doubt, a machine.
Okay, I have another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I used to take my my girlfriend, we'd go down to the beach, and this was when I was living in California, and we'd lie down and just watch the sky. And I used to see these, it was rare that we'd see it, but when we did, it looked like a star. And it looked very far away, and it wasn't a pulsating light, so I didn't think it was a plane. and this thing would be going, it would make like 90 degree angles. And I used to tell all my friends, if you look very carefully, you can see these things in the sky. And people, everybody thought that I was crazy and that it was just like, they said it was a satellite or a plane. Explain that?
No, and you're not crazy. You're not. There are all kinds of objects in the air. And, Bob, I don't know if you can specifically talk about this one episode, but, you know, this triangular-shaped object, which appears to be near military bases, that has this star-like pattern on the bottom of it, so it kind of just kind of melds right into the sky.
Well, I think what's come out tonight, and it's been a very lively discussion about the kinds of UFO and alien potential evidence that's out there, George. Let's remember, and you know this being so on top of the game and knowing how this works, most footage and most images that we see, we can't really tell for sure what they are. And as this caller just said tonight, I mean, he's seen things, but you're not quite sure. The kinds of things that I'm trying to point to the populace and say, look, are the things that are coming, let's say, from NASA cameras in space, where we see absolute things that should not be there. If you have a International Space Station, or formerly before that, a Mir station, or a space shuttle, it's very fragile. You know what I mean? If something were to hit this thing, come near this thing, it'd be a tragedy, devastating, loss of life, whatever.
Right.
You end up with these unknown craft caught on these NASA cameras that literally have been recorded by people down there on the Earth. So what you end up with is this kind of cachet of NASA footage that shows without a doubt we have something in our space vicinity of the Earth that are machines, and they're not ours. So that's not exactly answering what you asked, but I mean that's the kind of thing that I think it's important for us to kind of get away from simply seeing entertainment like American Idol, and it's a great show and all that, but maybe I'm making my plug here. I mean, you cannot live on American Idol alone. You cannot live on these things. I think the public needs to see more and more of the kind of things that we're amassing, whether they be in dramatic TV shows, believe it or not. I think one thing I'm noticing now is that there's an opportunity for viewers to see this kind of story played out in many different ways, but still see the evidence presented. And, you know, maybe we'll get into it a little tonight if we have a chance, but television is evolving like everything else, and there might be a way that we can start to get this kind of material into a little different format so that people start to say, hey, wait a minute, this is really important.
Yeah.
Because right now I'm getting that there's a lot of people who feel that UFOs, like I said before, simply aren't being seen and aren't being documented, and that's completely erroneous and not true at all.
East of the Rockies, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello.
Hello, is this Louie?
Yeah, well, I'm George. I don't know who you are.
Well, this is Louie.
Okay.
Nice to speak to you, George.
Okay, Louie, go ahead.
I hear again talk of the Phoenix Lights. I like to call them the Minnesota Lights because, I'm going to be turning 41 here on May 8th, and I seen them probably when I was about 13 years old. But as one of the previous callers was saying, you'll see he's seen like a one white dot going across the sky, and it would move in different directions. It was way up in the sky, the V-shaped formation. It was moving in it would turn so fast. It's just indescribable. It was going in like it was climbing steps, kind of in that kind of a pattern, and then it would go straight for a while. And I just sat and watched that until it disappeared to my right, and you know, the government wants to say the Phoenix Lights were flares or something they were dropping. Well, there's no way that those were flares way up that high.
By the way, George, just Phoenix alone, it brings up so many things for people. But you got to remember that the Phoenix event in 97 had a couple of layers of UFO footage and sightings amassed that night. We had this triangular, large craft
through
the middle of the state.
Might have been, what, a mile?
They say those kind of numbers. And by the way, to answer your question really quickly, there is a lot of evidence suggesting that the government is building large, almost aerodynamic football field-type objects that are triangular that may even be reflecting starlight underneath or above it, and to create sort of a camouflage to it that are not from another planet, that may well be a new technology that we're developing along the lines of stealth and all that. But minus that, on Phoenix, in the case of Phoenix, you had this triangular craft going through the state. Then you had these weird objects appearing above a mountain, turning on almost like, you know, lights. Now, people have said, well, they appear to be flares. The military claimed they were flares. Well, no flare we've ever seen hover and stay right in place, in formation, like that night. And now, as a little bit of a bonus, people are going to see some new Jeff Willis footage, who we had on tonight. Jeff shot, not only did he shoot this amazing flying dome saucer and many other things, but he shot what may be the next round of Phoenix-type lights of these orbs appearing at night above a mountain. They are extraordinary lights. It looks like they're appearing literally out of nowhere. They are just forming in midair. They're not flares in any way, shape, and form. So Jeff is continuing, Jeff Willis, the Phoenix lights kind of coverage, if you will, by capturing even more imagery that was similar to what was captured back in 97. And this was captured just last year or the year before.
Are you looking for Champy out there in the state of New York, the Loch Ness?
Ironically, we are. We are in negotiations now to air, we believe for the first time in prime time, what looks like bona fide video shot by a fisherman of a, I would like to use the word cute, a very cute-looking dinosaur-like creature in Lake Champlain in New York, where, of course, Champy has been reported for years like a Loch Ness monster-type creature. But it could well be a plesiosaur, a thought-to-be-extinct dinosaur-type creature that got kind of landlocked into the lakes around. If you look at all the lakes around the world where these alleged monsters or cryptozoological mystery creatures are, call them sea serpents, if you will, they seem to be at the same latitude around the planet. So maybe through some sort of ice age, plate tectonics and all the other things that happened back during the ice age, maybe just certain areas got kind of blocked away from the ocean and locked these creatures in. So we have now proof, video proof, without a doubt, no fakery here, shot by fishermen, just a few. I think it was last year, but it was released by ABC News, actually, just a couple of months ago. And we're trying to do the first definitive investigation of it. And good for you, George, for even knowing about that.
How did you and others get this footage so fast? I mean, does it come to you or what?
The story is that the fishermen were unsure what to do with it for a while. And then they decided to kind of go public with it. And we were just lucky to kind of be, you know, George, just like you guys do on your great show on Coast to Coast, by being up on what's happening daily, the way you put out great stuff on the Internet every day on your website. I love your little news stories. I read them a lot. This is just one of those stories that just crossed your desk. And it was like, fishermen unveil their amazing Champy footage, you know? And that's how we found, you know, we find out about the easy way too, George. We don't always have to travel neither, you know, hither and yonder
exactly.
to find the footage, you know?
And then you pounce on it.
And then we do the laborious, now come on, tell us why you held on to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you coming public now? How much money do you want? Well, and all that.
Well, we come back, we're talking with Bob about his Bigfoot footage, and also we'll take some of your final phone calls. What a fast night. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Our special guest tonight is Hollywood producer Bob Kiviet, and he enjoys the paranormal field. He understands it, and that's why his television programs look so good. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest Bob Kiviet today, and we will go back to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
Is this George Norrie?
Yes, sir, it is.
Oh, well, this is John, Seattle, Washington.
Hey, John. Go ahead.
Yes. Bob's AM 570 KVI.
Yeah, you got it.
I just had one question for your guest, sir. First, let me say it's an honor to talk with you. You're doing a great public service.
Thank you, John.
I think I really appreciate
Let's not all fight over who's doing the public service, Bob. go ahead.
Something so obvious has occurred to me. I had to call. what the heck is wrong with the scientific community? What are
great,
they doing
by the way, great question.
Hands? What is going on? Why aren't they behind this? There's something out there. I've seen some things. I know some friends who've seen some things in the skies. What is wrong with the scientific community?
Do you try to get real scientists in any of your videos, Bob?
Let me say this as clearly as I can. The person who invented image processing, the way that we get images back from space, I'm not going to mention his name tonight, but he's an older gentleman, one of the most open-minded, amazing experts ever dealing with imagery, just how we get images of just space-related objects. You know, every planet you've ever seen is due to this guy's invention of how to create images with computers and all that the cameras take back from, you know, from space.
Sure.
One of the most open-minded individuals has looked at a large portion of the UFO videos that I've shown the public on Fox and other channels I've worked on. So without a doubt, I must say that he has taught me the problem with the scientific community firsthand. The problem is that they're conditioned to accept only a certain kind of evidence base. The evidence has to be so overwhelming for them to change the way they think that you'd almost have to have, and we've had these discussions many times up at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, about how big an image of a UFO would have to be on a regular, say, 19-inch screen for people to take it seriously. Scientists are just like everybody else in the world. They come with their own preconceived notions. They come with the idea that there can't be any proof of UFOs or aliens because, shucks, if there were, the government would announce that. So they come with that presupposition that there cannot be any evidence. The best example is when you show them imagery like what's being recorded in space by our NASA astronauts and other astronauts like the Russians, and you show them imagery of, let's say, Jeff Willis's flying saucer by his home and it flies away at an amazing speed, there's no level of education they've ever had as scientists to prepare them for that. They'd have to simply take an entire different approach, simply look at the imagery for what it is, analyze it like a good scientist would, which is getting rid of the very obvious explanations until you're left with the one that probably is the most truthful one. So I've seen this time and time again through the help of this individual at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who is retired now, and I've seen scientists literally of every age group go from skeptics to, geez, what is that, in a matter of minutes. But are they, the big point to answer your caller's question is, are they willing to risk being ridiculed by the scientific community? One of the best examples is this gentleman I know named Dr. Jack Kasher, who used to be at Nebraska, University of Nebraska. And he wrote papers about a very famous case that happened in 1991 where the shuttle was positioned looking at the Earth. And all of a sudden you saw what appeared to be unknown machines, UFOs, flying near the Earth, and some kind of a pulse weapon being shot at these UFOs,
yes,
before they fly away. It's called the STS-48
yeah,
tape.
Great video.
And he did a massive study, wrote it up in a peer-refereed paper, and even then, regular scientists would not take it seriously. That's unconscionable. He is a bright man, very respected, teaches physics at one of the top schools about teaching that. So all I know is that if he couldn't get respected by all of the scientific community, then I don't know who would. So we are living in a very strange time where, as you know, and most Americans know, we went to war in Iraq over evidence that has proven to be a lie. There was no real evidence to support it. So when you flip it around, why would scientists not be open-minded to UFOs if it's proven right on tape? There it is. Can't be anything else. Why not take it seriously? Well, they're conditioned, almost like in a religious way, to accept evidence only in a certain way, in a certain kind of provenance. And unfortunately, UFOs kind of break all those rules.
All right, next up, let's go east of the Rockies. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hello, I'm Anthony. I'm calling from Joplin, Missouri.
Hey, Jay. Thanks.
I'm curious to know if your guest has, in his investigations, come to any conclusions on how many fingers the alleged gray aliens have. Because there's several books that'll say six, and some that'll say four. In fact, my paperback copy of Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, actually shifts back and forth between six fingers and four fingers.
Well, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I think Philip Corso probably had, from what he wrote, the kind of documentation that would have kind of answered it. And if he was confused by the documentation, and maybe indeed it's one of those things that, you know, we don't even have bona fide proof that anyone's ever seen, at least I've never seen, that I could air on TV, of what a gray alien looks like beyond maybe what's on Willie Streber's books. Or, you know, I can't tell you what they look like. So whether or not they have four fingers or six fingers or very slanted eyes or very huge oval eyes or whatever they have, it's still up for debate. But the common, you know, for people not knowing exactly what you're talking about, and George, you can help here, a gray alien is basically that quintessential small creature, big head, large eyes, maybe not much of a mouth, maybe four fingers, maybe six fingers, a lot of maybes here.
Whitley Strieber has a new book coming out soon, Bob, called Grays, soon to be a movie as well. And I'm telling you, it is strange. I've always believed, though, that the Grays might be androids or humanoid-type robots that they send down to us, you know, with this very sophisticated technology.
I agree, but also it appears that there's a chance they might well be genetically deprived creatures.
True.
That need somehow this genetic material, and that seems to lead to the abduction phenomena. So, you know, whether you go back to Betty and Barney Hill, the classic case of UFO abduction, or you go to the most recent kind of reports, it appears they're interested in our cellular material, our DNA, our genetic material. Why are they so interested in that?
What are the odds of Jeff Willis, the videographer, being an abductee, because they're always around him?
Well, one thing Jeff did not say tonight that he's been good enough to tell our cameras and our interviews that viewers will see in our new shows. George, is it okay if I name the show that we're talking about?
Jeff, yeah, sure.
In?
Go ahead.
He'll be in both shortly at the end of Alien Autopsy, the True Story, that will appear all over the world starting in a few months. And then he'll be in another show we're doing called Best Evidence UFOs, which is a really jam-packed best of Hall of Fame hour that we're going to have Jeff open the show with a segment where we'll be talking all about Jeff. And Jeff will describe in the show that he believes he's had contact, almost remembers vividly sleeping as a young child, and some creature coming in the room and holding and touching his hand,
mm-hmm.
and waking up and going, who was that? What was that in my room?
What happened? Yeah.
So he seems to have had the classic kind of abduction memories or just feelings that maybe he has been abducted. But he believes, more importantly today, he doesn't focus on that so much, if I might say for him. He focuses more on there is almost like a second sense or a sixth sense that he should go to a certain place at a certain time. Sure, we'll check the National Reporting Center for hotspots of UFOs. Sure, we'll check what naturally would be a kind of an investigation of how, where to go. But he also follows that little sixth sense. And the case of the UFO with the dome on it flying over his home was one of those cases where he just got this feeling he's supposed to go outside. And I think that's an important thing that seems to be true for a lot of these UFO videographers, i.e. hunters. They have this kind of connection to the object they're videotaping, and it seems to almost telegraph them to, hey, get out with the camera. Hey, keep looking. It's pretty amazing. I know people find it hard to believe, but it seems to be part of a lot of the best UFO footage. Someone seems to be almost a target, and I think he implied that tonight on the show. So,
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Mary from Salt Lake City.
Okay, Mary, go ahead, please.
I think I might be off the subject a bit, but I would like to ask your guest, if it is possible, my very best friend and I did see a UFO when we were 5 years old, believe it or not, and we both remember. She died when I was 24.
Sorry to hear that.
From a tubal pregnancy. Now, I had a tubal pregnancy when I was 31, and I went to the doctor, and he said, I'm going to give you, well, first of all, the night before I went, she came to me in a dream and said, you're going to be given a choice, and it will be go now or wait, but go now or you're going to die. And when I went to the doctor the next day, he said, I think you could have a tubal pregnancy, so I can give you the weekend.
Well, no, I don't need that, and I'll tell you, you're not really off base here on the topic, because Bob has covered a lot of these different things, and what you did have was some kind of intuitive message simply sent to you, and I'm glad you reacted. And so many people don't, Bob. They don't react to their intuitiveness.
I know, and there's so many things out there that, you know, might be just a hunch you have, and you don't know where the hunch came from, but you just happen to be in the right place at the right time, and if ever that was true, it appears to be with UFO events. Happens somewhat with ghost events, so you be the judge. Seems to be a connection of a telepathic nature of some kind.
You gonna ever capture Bigfoot on video?
You know, it's funny you say that. We've had in our archive here a tape of what's called Skunk Ape, or what appears to be Skunk Ape, a Florida-based Bigfoot.
Sure.
That seems to inhabit the Everglades, George. And most people want to laugh it off when they hear about this Skunk Ape because, you know, when you think of Florida, you think of alligators. You don't think of the, Pacific Northwest where a burly, you know, Bigfoot might be. But Florida has its own version of Bigfoot, and people have been reporting it for many, many, many decades. So one particular skunk ape hunter, again, see, Bigfoot hunter, UFO hunter, skunk ape hunter, he has shot what appears to be a rather slender, I would say, Bigfoot-type creature running, first walking, ambling through the Everglades, and running through the Everglades, and apparently was targeting him because he was sitting out in this big chair with a camera trying to videotape something like Skunk Ape, and sure enough, this thing came by. Now, many people might say, hey, this could be a fake. This could be a guy in a suit, the old classic Bigfoot suit, you know, accusation again, but he is also photographed Skunk Ape, and other people have shot similar images of what's on videotape. So we're planning on showing that in a new show, and it'll be the Skunk Ape investigation, where this guy will hopefully bring us out into the Everglades and show us where he thinks a family of these Skunk Ape are living. And they look a little like Bigfoot. They have a very similar kind of makeup.
They do. Mm-hmm.
A little bit thinner, maybe because the hot weather keeps them a little slender.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yeah, John from Huntsville, Alabama.
Hi, John. Go ahead.
What I wanted to ask your guest about, he mentioned earlier he was talking about the Phoenix Lights. And the Phoenix Lights, people who've actually seen them, not just the lights as it went overhead in Phoenix, but the actual shape of it. Was this a solid triangular shape or a V-shape, a boomerang V-shape?
There really were three different things that happened. You're talking about the famous night back a little less than a decade ago, 97?
Yeah. Yeah.
You had three separate events, or at least, let's say, two major ones. Let's go back to the two major ones. A apparent triangular UFO flying right through the state, being seen by many communities along a certain track, if you follow it on kind of a graph on a map. And then, unrelated to that, seemingly, but many experts believe it was related, appears to be some kind of strange formation of stationary lights coming on over a mountain, very much like you would see if these were like either parts of a ship, their lights being turned on, or absolute orbs that just kind of hover above the mountain. Now, some people have said, the military included, that they were flares from a nearby base or a nearby range. Ridiculous. I mean, the things that people have shown as flares look like flares. The things that this imagery seemed to show were not flares. So there appears to be, like I said, two events that particular night, but maybe three, according to many people, and maybe they're related. Assuming that they are related, maybe that one was some sort of a military plane or some kind of craft, because George asked earlier, what might be this gigantic kind of triangular craft people are seeing around the world? It might be something that we're developing, a huge Airbus, if you will, that could travel, you know, very, very slow or fast, hover, move, become invisible by kind of bouncing light from the sky and using different techniques and stuff. But maybe the same night in Phoenix, there was also UFOs over the mountain. And what is the connection there? One can only guess. But this guy, Jeff Willis, that we had on tonight with me, with George, he also shot additional lights over a nearby mountain range in that same area that we're going to be showing in our new show, that in many ways might go beyond what people saw the night of the Phoenix lights.
We're going to be able to see these shows here in the United States, Bob?
Oh, yeah. They're going to be on, whether it be regular television in some parts of the country, the classic new format called Video On Demand or pay-per-view. But again, we're just looking for the what we call distribution window and how it'll play out. But we're in production on the shows right now.
Very good. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you being on the program.
My pleasure, George.
Isn't that incredible, that alien autopsy whole story and the way it evolved and what's still happening with that? I do. I remember seeing it 10 years ago, and it just blew my mind. And though I looked at it and said to myself, this just isn't real. Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.